could hold you. I should have told you. I'd do anything to feel you in my arms again. I wish I could say we might have been.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the table. It is great to have everybody here. Thank you for pulling a chair up. Hopefully you were jamming out with us just like we were. We've got an incredibly talented panel here, but we've had a Rye Wolf or Mr. Darren Flowers, a gentleman right there. He's an incredible guy, has an incredible talent playing the guitar, putting music together, doing stuff. About, I don't know, 4 months ago or so, he put a blues album out in the name of Darren Matthews Flowers. If you haven't read it, or excuse me, if you haven't listened to it, please go on Spotify and iTunes and download the album, pay for it, whatever you got to do, help out the little artists. You know, those guys are always doing an incredible job trying to keep things going. But that track right there you heard from Rye Wolf or Darren Flowers, is I Wish I Could, dropped about 4 weeks ago. It's an incredible track. Darren, thanks for providing that for the introduction, and we really appreciate it. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, no, thank you for letting me promote it on here. It's a very cool platform to get out. You know, I mean, coaches do a lot of different things. They don't just coach, and I think that's important, you know, to find balance in your life and your career, and that's just my, I guess that's my poison. You know, I've been playing music for a long time, and you know, when I found out that that didn't pay a lot when I first started, I had to get a real profession. So that's kind of led me into coaching. But now I really enjoy doing it. And honestly, you know, all this COVID stuff, as bad as it's been, it's given me an opportunity to kind of tap into my creative side. So so yeah, that's what that's all about.
I love it. So is there an inspiration behind I Wish I Could?
Oh, you know, probably just past experiences, you know, being a dumb college kid. As we all were.
We've all done some stupid things. No questions about that in college. But no, Darren, yeah, that's an incredible thing. Please, ladies and gentlemen, go listen to it. Go check it out. It's on iTunes. It's on Spotify. Where else can they listen to it, Darren?
Oh, anywhere. I mean, any platform that they have. Google, Amazon.
Awesome.
It's all good.
Just to make sure, it's R-I-Wolf. I know we're pronouncing it Rye, and would you think so?
Correct.
Spelling, but correct. Wolf. Yep.
Okay. That's right. And I'll have to tell you a story about that offline sometime.
Oof, yeah. It's when you don't hit record that you actually sit down and get those stories out. But, if you turned into the podcast and realized, wait a minute, I thought this is a track podcast, not a music podcast. No, you're in the right spot. As Darren said, at COVID, sometimes we get some, I think a lot of us coaches have hidden talents other than maybe myself, but we do have a lot of hidden talents that we like to dive into, help us do a stress relief, help us just become normal people. Because we do so much coaching, so much traveling, so much going. So we want to make sure that we highlight that kind of stuff. But yes, you have made it to the meeting of the unknowing minds. Thank you for pulling that chair up to the table. Hopefully this is going to be a good one. It will be a little intense, a little bit fun, a little bit in between. We've never done something like this before. We've got a huge group on tonight. We'll get into them in a second, but we've got Portia Dobson and the Dartmouth track and field cross country staff is here with us, joining us. And we say we have a full house. That is exactly what we're doing. I promise you, just like hopefully for your Thanksgiving and Christmas, you guys are social distancing, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're keeping our distances and we're making things happen in today's world. But hopefully you've been able to pull that coffee pot on and pull yourself a cup, maybe got some juice going, some water, whatever the case might be. I remember a few weeks ago we talked about Canadian canned water, which was just blows my mind. It still does. But hopefully, if not, you've poured a little something on the rocks, you've got a little popped a couple tops, whatever the case might be, and you're joining us, relaxing and listening to us. We truly appreciate you making us one of the top running podcasts in the country. So without further ado, we got some great stuff to talk to. We already brought in Mr. Darren Flowers. It's great to have him here. The gentleman who is sitting back and relaxing up in St. Louis, Mr. John Bell. How we doing, sir?
Oh, we're doing well. Yeah, it's been, like I said, it's been a few weeks since I had to coach. Again, the Halloween parties get you in a little bit of trouble, but kids are good. They responded well, and we're in finals this week. So yep. Even if we didn't have a little shutdown, we wouldn't be practicing because of finals this week. So kids will finish up this week, and actually they're taking their finals online, so they're already home. So a little Christmas break, and we'll get after it second semester.
Man, it'll be exciting to get the kids back, but a two-month break is always something that we're still not used to. This is incredible. We've got the gentleman who bought all his books from Crate and Barrel and Barn. And he wanted to make it look like Barnes & Noble, but it's actually Crate and Barrel, maybe even Pottery Barn. You never know what's going on in the background. Mr. Mike Erb, how you doing, sir?
That's where you get the decorative stuff. That's where you get things just to make it, make yourself look a little smarter. But I'm good, man. We, we're back on campus after Thanksgiving, and it's just athletes now. They sent the students home till February, and we've had no negative tests upon return. So we're pretty excited to get going and finish up the season or the semester strong, and hopefully we have the same coming back, and hopefully we have a season. So we'll be ready to go if there is.
Hopefully we do have a season. I'm glad things are going well. You guys are back. You guys are rocking and rolling. That's the best part right there. And we got the gentleman who's always helped and inspire my love for gumbo and jambalaya. We were talking about some gumbo a couple nights ago. We got a great place here in Birmingham. If anybody gets down here, Snapper Grabbers, guys makes it homemade twice a day for the last 30 years. Same recipe. It is incredible. Some seafood and chicken gumbo, actually. I was wrong on the meat, Scott. But Scott Williamson out of Nevada. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. I was, I wasn't hungry, but now all of a sudden I'm hungry again. I hadn't had dinner yet. So I guess I'll have to plug through here for a while. So
no $30 pizza, Scott.
Yeah. I'm not touching the pizzas. Gee whiz.
You never know with the Pottery Barn background that you got going on. Maybe you can't afford a $30 pizza. Who knows that, you know? But as we mentioned in the opening, you've seen him on the Instagram account and the Twitter account and all that kind of stuff. We are very excited to have Portia Dobson on, the Marjorie and Herbert Chase class of 1930, director of Dartmouth Track and Field and Cross Country. Portia, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We're excited to have it. First and foremost, before we get into a couple things, I want to say congratulations, because I've done my homework. I always try and do homework when I do these, when we do these podcasts. And I know Dartmouth did their homework as well, realizing you are most likely, if not, we are putting it out there that we 100% believe that you're the first female and probably the first Black coach at an Ivy League school as a director. If I'm not mistaken, that's not just at Dartmouth, that's at Penn, Cornell, Harvard, Columbia, all that kind of stuff. So we want to just say congratulations for that. That's incredible.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. I actually believe I might be the third female and probably the only Black director. It's funny, because when I first acquired this position, I was speaking with our sports communication representative, and we both sat on the phone like trying to count in our head, but there was no one to count. So we were just like, if we can't figure it out, then we must be doing something pretty big here. So that, yes, that's exciting. Thank you.
No, that's an incredible thing. I talked to a couple of friends and colleagues that have been in the Ivy League and you know, that are in right now and have been in, and they were like, crickets, you know, trying to think of names as well. And which is not a bad thing, but at the same time, it is a bad thing. It's something, it's a wall, it's a barrier that's been broken. Now we're going to get to that in a second, in a couple minutes, but apparently you decided to bring some guests along with you. So I'm going to let you actually introduce your guests and the people you've decided to, you know, bring with.
Yeah, thanks. This is not only exciting time for myself, but it's also exciting time for Dartmouth Track and Field and Cross Country. And it's literally my 8th week into this. So 2 months, I guess. I think it's about 5 weeks in Hennem or Lebanon area. But I wanted to bring along, you know, my staff with me, because this is the group I'm doing it with. Like, this is the group that is experiencing all of this with me, and we're really trying to make it happen. So I will actually start with Coach Courtney Jaworski. So Courtney is our women's head cross country coach, as well as he's recently promoted to our track and field associate head coach. Courtney and I, we met through a mutual friend many, many years ago. So it's funny how this all kind of circles back. It's one of our best friends. He's from Jersey. He and I are both from Jersey. But Courtney actually was a standout athlete at Penn, coincidentally. So standout athlete at Penn, multiple time All-American there, 8-time Ivy League champion, athlete of the year, regional athlete of the year. And in high school, Courtney actually was an 8-time national champion, which was quite cool. I can't say I was a national champion. I was runner up. So I think he's got me there. On the collegiate level, Courtney actually, he's made his rounds and had a lot of experience prior to coming to the league. And Courtney's been in the league just about the same time I've been. Maybe I think I'm 8.5 years. You're about 7 years or so.
Yeah, 7 years, a couple of years less than you. Yeah.
Yeah. So And while Courtney's been at Dartmouth, he's been crushing it. I mean, his women, they've been to the NCAA championships. They've won Ivy titles. He has multiple All-Americans. And so we're really glad to have him. And like I said, it's a nice familiar face when I come into the office. So.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think I got everything, right?
Definitely. And then some. Thank you for that. It's flattering.
And then I'll actually move on to Coach Justin Wood. He's the newbie of the group. So Justin actually, as I was leaving Division III, Justin was actually coming into Division III in the same area. So that's kind of how I know a little bit of what Justin's done and his success in the past. And he's in his own right, he's established. He's had multiple All-Americans at many levels and has taken a team to their first berth of the national championships in cross country. And then even as an athlete, he was a standout athlete at his university as well. Justin is a Northeast guy. He's from Jersey, right? New York.
Upstate New York.
Okay.
There you go. Come on, got to get it right.
Oh, sorry. I think I want everyone to be from Jersey. So it's close enough, from New York. Justin has also taken some folks to the USA National Championships. Coach Courtney, he's been to the USA National Championships and ran with Nike Elite. Or Nike Oregon Elite Project. So he's been there, and he has that experience as well, Olympic trials and all that good stuff. So, we're happy to have Justin on board. Justin joins us after Barry's retirement as well. So welcoming Justin. And then last but certainly not least, Coach Tim Wunderlich. So I actually coached against Tim in the league. So when I was coaching horizontal jumps and helping out with the multis as well. So coached against Coach Tim. He's pretty fun because Coach Tim is actually an alum of Dartmouth. So he was a decathlete at Dartmouth. And that's really his expertise. That's what he does. Multiple All-Americans in the decathlon and the high jump. And then being able to take some of those athletes too, again, to the U.S. National Championships. And Coach Tim is a standout decathlete himself, post-collegiate. So he's qualified for USA Championships as well. So, and had all those experiences. So we've got quite a staff here, and I'm happy and I'm proud of them. So
still kicking at age 33 now. So still trying to go after the dream.
What's the dream then? What's the goal?
Ultimate goal would be to make the trials. I was going to be done training after this coming year, and then the trials was postponed. I'm like, well, I guess I got to try to keep going and see if I can get there. That's like the last meet on my bucket list. I've made it to USA's and done some international competitions and stuff, but that's the last one. It's the hardest one to get to, so we'll see.
That's incredible. I'd say keep going. If your body's still letting you do it, please absolutely keep going. No questions about it, you know?
Yeah, it's...
Go back and check out one of our first podcasts with Jordan Gray. That was an incredible one, too. You'll probably enjoy that. You know that name, of course.
Yeah. I've competed alongside her, not with her, obviously, but alongside her in some certain meets. So cool stuff.
She's an incredible, talented. Porsche, you've done an incredible job with the staff. It's an accomplished one. You guys are going to do some great things. And as we know, Coach Barry set a very nice, a really good standard, and you guys are going to take that standard and blow through it. So it's going to be exciting to watch and see. Porsche, we got to come back to you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about the background, if you would. We need a couple questions I want to hit first. But tell us a little bit about your background, because you're from Jersey. You go down to Carolina. How do you get to Carolina? And if I'm not mistaken, you volunteered at Seton Hall and then up to Montclair State to roll from there. How does that happen?
Yeah, so it's actually funny you asked me that question, because yes, coming from New Jersey and then going down to Carolina, yep. I'm an ACC alum. So, I've been in that league, and, I know how competitive it is and how exciting it is and the passion that the student athletes and the coaches have in that league. So it's definitely an interesting time. for our sport. But it's also an exciting time for our sport. We're bringing a lot of attention to our sport right now. And even with, you know, Dartmouth Track and Field, like it's an exciting time too. So I think we have to celebrate those aspects of it as well. But coming from Jersey, I'm from North Jersey. For all you listeners, there is a clear distinction, North and South. Don't get it twisted.
Well, you're not from New York, right? I mean, you're telling Justin he's from Jersey, but he's from upstate New York.
Well, that's why I got it mixed up, right? I'm from Jersey. I actually attended in a small all-girl private school. It was funny, my background, lots of people thought I was recruited to that school. If you do your research, no, I started track when I was in ninth grade. I attended that school since third grade. So I'm a lifer, that's what they call, 10 years, you're a lifer. Went off and to UNC, continued my athletic career there. And really just kind of fast forward, after UNC, returned home to New Jersey and was able to take advantage of an opportunity that was offered to me by a former high school coach mentor. He used to coach at a camp that I attended at Columbia High School, actually, which used to be a really big track and field powerhouse out of Jersey. But he was coaching at Seton Hall University. I volunteered there, coaching mostly hurdlers, actually men and women hurdlers. And he encouraged me and really supported me to go ahead and apply to Montclair State. It was being advertised as a part-time head coach position, actually. Part-time head coach position, like full-time duties, right?
That's how it always happens.
I literally think I was getting paid, and I'm not ashamed to say it's like $12,000 a year, right? So it's like, you gotta love it if you're gonna go out there and do it. But at the same time, I was working a full-time job. So I would get up, I'd be to work by 7. I would leave work at 3:15. The university was about 15 minutes away. I would drive there. I had it all set up. The team was ready to go at 3:30. We'd practice, and then after practice, I'd go ahead and complete my administration duties as a head coach. The university is about 45 minutes away from my house, so yeah, we didn't have an indoor track, you know. So we actually traveled to the Armory. And our time slot was at what was our time slot? I think like 6:30. So if you can imagine heading over the bridge at rush hour, getting there at 6:30, you're getting out at 9:00. Driving the students back home, they're going, then getting myself back home. So really wasn't getting home until roughly 11:30, sometimes midnight. And then of course, doing it all again, back at work at 7. So I did that for 3 years. It was great. You know, I had good experience, took some folks to nationals, finished high at conference. 3 years later, boom, I'm at Penn. And the rest is kind of history as I'm now in the league. So like I said, in the league, 8.5 years at Penn, starting as an assistant, fortunate to be promoted to associate head coach, and now I'm here at Dartmouth. So that's my path.
it's a pretty incredible path. You're right. With North Carolina, you did some great things down there at Carolina, no questions about it. Had a great career. And then all of a sudden, I mean, I love the fact you skim over real quick, you know, what I think you've had, what, a coach of the year back in 2011, back in Montclair State, and then 2018, 2019, USTF CCCA Regional Coach of the Year at Penn, which, I mean, probably led to the associate head coach at Penn as well. So you come in with some pretty dang good credentials, and you've done an incredible job every time you turn around with that stuff. I've only been to one Penn relays. I froze my ass off that night. It was a Wednesday night for the Distance Carnival, and I was like, this is, like, I love Drake relays, but being an Iowa alum. And here we go. Scott and I both being Iowa alums. We love Drake, but at the same time, it's like, wait a minute. I skipped Drake to come up and freeze my ass off here. Drake doesn't have as bad of weather, you know? I mean, come on.
Okay. Did you just say only Wednesday night, distance night? You did not get the full experience. Get the heck out of here. You did not.
God, I don't know if you can go that far to say Drake doesn't have bad weather either.
No. Cold weather. Cold weather. I haven't been to a Drake.
Really, I've seen snow at Drake, Matt.
I've ran in the snow at Drake, so I, yep. I know there's some bad weather.
I'll stick with Texas relays. I'll stick with Texas relays. I'm not going north.
Wait.
I've been pretty cold at the Texas relays, though.
Thank you, Scott. It's definitely been cold at Texas relays.
I want to give you some, like, credit for that pen relay stuff though, because I wasn't somebody that I've been here at Indiana. Ron Helmer loves pen relays, just yeah. absolutely loves it. I didn't want to go. And then when I was there for the first time in forever, just a couple years ago, you know, I'm coaching the jumps, and those horizontal jumps are going on when it's USA versus the world in that 4x1. And I mean, you know, I've been all the places. I've been to Oregon. I've been to every, and when you're, I've never felt a crowd, the energy from a crowd ever anywhere in the world as I did watching USA versus the world on the infield of the pen relay. So cold weather, rain, been through all that, but to watch, you know, Jamaica and USA come tearing down that stretch when the place was going bananas was pretty special. So I like it.
That's pretty cool.
I would honestly, no, you're right. I went for a Wednesday night, and the gentleman who was my head coach at the time only let us, you know, you got to fly in Tuesday, Wednesday for the distances and fly out. We flew out like Thursday afternoon. So we weren't even allowed to stay for the next day to be able to watch everything go. And it was a rough, I mean, I wanted to stay. I was excited to be at Penn, honestly, because again, been to Drake, get to go to Penn for the first time, wanted to be able to do that stuff, not going to be able to. And you're right. I've been to Hayward. I was able to watch Chesbrick rock and roll and actually kind of feel that atmosphere you get when an Oregon runner at Hayward is moving. You feel the ghosts come back to life. You get the hair standing on the back of your neck. And I wanted to feel exactly what Herb did when, you know, USA versus Jamaica rock and roll. And so it's on the bucket list to go back to see the whole thing. No questions about that.
Yeah, I it's also too, I mean, all these meets that you guys are mentioning, like, they're a celebration of our sport. It's such a great time. People come out, and it's those type of meets that lots of folks don't even know most of the athletes out there. They're just fans of the sport, you know, and they just go and they might follow a high school athlete and then have that fun and follow them all the way through college. Like, it's just the love of the sport. And it's kind of like you spend that time with friends and family and fraternity brothers and sorority sisters, and you just kind of go out and have a good time. It's like tailgating at a football game, you know, it's what we do. So.
It's a fun thing. I love it. I miss it. So going back to you and the career itself, we talked about this, we briefly mentioned it, not only off camera, but we mentioned it right when we got to the introduction itself. We've done some digging, you've done some digging, we've tried to figure it out, Dartmouth has done some digging. I would say, I'm going to tweak my statement a little bit, one of the very, very few directors of track and field ever, track and field and cross country ever in the Ivy League. I believe the first one at Dartmouth, but as well, we're, from what we have found, the first Black female director of track and field and cross country at an Ivy League school. Portia, what does that mean to you?
What does it mean to me? What it's been like?
Yeah.
It's been awesome. Having a lot of fun. It's quite nice because in my opinion, representation is just so very important. And in my life, you know, that representation there was my mom and my sister, right? They were the first examples and models for me, and being able to kind of see like, hey, they're trying to make it happen and make it better for me. And I use those two as an example because when folks see me, you know, whether they're a woman, you know, whether they're a Black woman, whether they're a minority, a Black or brown person in general, being able to see that representation at a higher level. Yeah, we see them as assistants, we see them as deputies, we see them as associates and so on and so forth, but it does hit a little bit different when you see them in a role like mine. But at the same time, like I said, it's fun, I'm loving it, and not just because of what I look like and my gender. I think I've had so many people can almost agree and vouch with me, like, I work my butt off to get to where I am, you know.
Absolutely.
I'm well respected in the league, and that's because of my track record, what I've done, exactly what we've discussed just now, you know, the path that I've taken to get here, the dedication, the commitment, and really being able to kind of look back over my career and understand, you know, where I was in my younger years and how I've improved and what I've done and putting my ego aside, you know, not thinking that I know everything, learning more and more and more. And when I don't know something, really going to ask, going to study, going to classes, reading books, the amount of books that I read. I'm a little bit of a track nerd, you know, undercover. I try and play that that cool girl type, but at the end of the day, like, that's what I do at night. I'm that person that wakes up in the middle of the night, and because I'm dreaming about something, I have a pad next to my bed, and like, this is what I want to do, or, you know, so-and-so should be running this instead, or this is a good idea, I'm gonna make sure I bring it to the office tomorrow. You know, it's how I am, it's who I am, and yeah. I think it definitely contributes to the success that I've had. But again, being in these type of roles, and even with my staff, you know, they have these titles, but these titles are, I don't want people to get, you know, the title and the role confused. They're good at what they do, and I'm good at what I do, because not only are we successful with our student athletes, but being a leader, you really have that responsibility and that goal and objective of assisting people to become the best that they can be, right? You may not be that one person who's going to really help everybody, but you're someone who is helping them along their journey to be as great as they can be. And I really think that is contributes to everything. And we're using track and field as a vehicle to build the whole person. And that's what we enjoy doing. You know, I enjoy working with young people. So to circle back to that question, I'm having a great time. This is fun. This is an exciting time in my life, and I'm happy to share it with these folks. So,
I think we're all really excited too to have Portia just kind of lead the charge a little bit for us. And like, you know, it's kind of hitting the refresh button on the program since a couple of us have been around a little while and kind of gone through some of the changes, and the energy, the new energy that she's bringing is really exciting. Just to kind of see some of the new ideas that are going to take place and see what the program can become in the next couple of years is really cool. So,
Timothy, it's great because especially being an alum that you are, you get to see that stuff firsthand and be able to see that rock and roll. Justin, Courtney, what do you guys think about, you know, your new boss and being up at Dartmouth?
Well, I've been here for 2 days, so, and I'm not even, I'm still in Southern California. But I'll tell you, I'm still pumped to have her lead the charge. I mean, you know, just spending time around her and talking with her about her vision and what the future looks like for Dartmouth, you know, it's something I want to be a part of, but I want to contribute to as well. You know, it's not just, you know, seeing what she does. Obviously, I want to learn from her, and but I want to do my part with the men's distance squad. And obviously, you know, I have experience as a head coach sort of overseeing everything. So I'm motivated to contribute in other areas too, which is kind of unique coming in, you know, having a lot of head coaching experience overseeing all the different, you know, sprints, hurdles, jumps, throws, and distance. Well, now I'm looking at this like I want to run my crew, but then I want to go over and hang out with Tim and see what he's doing, and go hang out with Courtney and see what he's doing with him, you know. And this is it's going to be a lot of fun, you know, for me and in my growth, but certainly the future of Dartmouth cross country track and field is really exciting. And I think everybody will see that as we get things going here pretty soon.
Yeah, I would agree with Tim to just kind of echo what he said about the energy. That's, I think, something that we need at this moment, especially during COVID and how we transition through this coaching staff. I think the energy that Porsche is bringing, what we saw at Penn and what she'll have here. I mean, the student athletes at the college and us as a staff, we couldn't be more excited. And as we all know, as coaches, having that energy really promotes awesome performances on the track, on the field, and wherever these students are at in their development in this sport and as people. I think the energy that she's bringing, and hopefully that's encapsulated by our program, will be, I don't know, just kind of heightened a bit. So I think we're all excited, and yeah, just welcome, Portia. It's going to be fun.
I think so. I mean, that's incredible. You got a staff that's actually right behind you that's ready to rock and roll. You can tell they're ready to roll. So what's it been like? I mean, because all of us right now, I mean, Nevada, we're at SLU, we're at UTRGV and Indiana and UAB. You know, so we're not Ivy League schools. I think we can all figure that one out. We got some smart schools, but we're not Ivy League schools. What's it been like? I mean, you walk in right away, 2 months on the job, 11 weeks up there in the Hanover area. Like, all of a sudden, boom, you're trying to get to know the kids. How has that been tough for you? Or exciting? I mean, I know it's exciting, but how has it been tough? What are the challenges?
Yeah, I think a transition and relocating and joining a new family is always going to have its challenges, right? And I like to kind of refer to it as a family, because in our own families, we have growing pains, right? When people change,
oh, yeah,
and we go through different times in our lives. So I really consider this as just joining a new family. As you all know, you're all coaches, or you've all been coaches, and you know how it is. This job is 24/7. So yep. You spend more time with each other and the student athletes than you do your own friends and family. And so really just being able to kind of insert myself in this situation. And I always like to mention, it's kind of a funny story. I was offered the job on a Saturday. They announced it on a Tuesday. Last day at Penn was on a Wednesday. First day at Dartmouth was on a Thursday, that very next day. And guess what happened on Thursday? 10 o'clock staff meeting. So if you can imagine, I was ready to go. You know, I think I celebrated that Wednesday a little bit, three quarters of the day. And then that night, I just sat down and was like, all right, how do we get going? And I think Coach Courtney, Coach Tim could attest to that. just really being able to kind of share my vision with them and really get on the roll and get to know them better. I think that's one of the most important things, right? So being able to know the person, and that's even, you know, just working with anybody. Once you get to know the person a little bit better, you have a better understanding of them, and you know how to cater to them. You know how to accommodate them. So it was with the staff and it was with the team. We had our first team meeting was that Friday, you know, that very Friday. After that, broke down into event groups. I spoke with the throwers individually. I spoke with the jumpers and the sprinters and the distance runners. So once I got that going, it was exciting to speak to everyone. Very welcoming. Folks reached out to me, individuals from the team wanted to have Zoom calls with me, sent emails, sent text messages, and literally just to say hi. I remember one young lady, she was just sitting there on Zoom and, you know, she's like, I know you're really busy, but I just wanted to say, hey. And like, I'm looking at the clock, like, and I told her, I was like, you're right, I am busy, but I'm really glad you got to say hey. but she was so nice, and that was the thing. She ran out of things to say, and she even said, she goes, well, I really don't have anything else, but just glad to have you. And just things like that. It was just, I know that everyone's invested. People are, they're ready for the new era, they're ready for the next stage. So I was working remotely for quite some time. New Hampshire had its quarantine mandate, so once I arrived here, I quarantined for 14 days, and then I was able to go ahead and meet the staff in person. We had a nice little social distance breakfast together, and then they were kind enough to show me, you know, all the offices and the campus. So right away, just really trying to make that connection and spend time together. So so it's been good. Like I said, I wouldn't say it was necessarily tough, because everyone was still excited. We had that adrenaline pushing us, but it was definitely an enjoyable time. And again, you know, appreciating the people around. That's what I'm coming into. So I'm glad about that.
So here's something we've talked about on the podcast a little bit, and hearing every one of hearing the energy that you guys have, the four of you have. I'm going to go with the four of you. You know, Coach Tim, Justin, Courtney, Portia. You guys have for track and field. You guys have all been at the highest levels. Timothy, you're still competing, looking to make the trials here. One more bucket list meet, that kind of stuff. One thing we have talked about in this podcast numerous times to numerous people, and we always enjoy hearing it, I guess it's maybe a staple question, is how would you change track and field at the collegiate level to make it more enticing? Because you talk about, and of course you did a great job. I think we'd all agree. The Texas relays, the Penn relays, the Drake relays, and even if you go back in the history, the Kansas relays as well, we're all, and even our today, are a celebration of track and field and our sport itself that we so, you know, absolutely love. But as we know, going to long track meets is boring as hell. You know, you get there at 8 a.m., you got an event that starts at 10, and then you're not out of there till 10. Nobody really wants to be doing that, because those hot dogs at the concession stands absolutely suck by the time you're done eating that kind of stuff, for the nachos, whatever you brought in. Like, it is terrible. Okay, so what do you change? What would you guys change? And this is questions for everybody, of course. What would you guys change in the sport? What would you do? Would you shorten it? Would you lengthen it? Would you say, hey, you know what, Timothy, we're going to do a multis event day, or, you know, Justin, we're just going to do we're going to do the distances. We're going to do the 3-5 and the steeple at night. Like, what would you guys change?
Personally, I mean, I'm a bit of a, I guess, historian when it comes to the Ivy League and our way of doing track and field and cross country. And I know it's not necessarily the most popular suggestion, but I love tries and quad meets. I mean, the histories of these programs, especially on the men's side, they go back to the 1870s, and we've been having dual meets and tri meets for such a long time. Dartmouth still has a Dartmouth Yale Columbia tri meet in the indoor season. I know Penn, Portia might be new, but you guys had a try with Harvard and another school. But I think maybe coming back to those meets at least once in a while during the season, I mean, sports loves a winner, right? It's our sport. I mean, there's so many events, there's so many winners, and it's very hard to follow who's doing what, but sports loves winners, right? They love that. And I think to have a team that wins is good. Oh man, everyone's laughing when I
No.
We talk about this all the time. Like that's just something we talk about. We want winners and losers.
Said, the winners and losers, to me, that's the end of it, right? Like, because you don't need to know, like I've said a million times and it's a broken record. Nobody cares if somebody's running 4:10 or 3:52 in the mile. They want to see two or three people come down the home stretch and battle and have two guys laid out at the end of the meet and see, you know what I mean? And see somebody win and somebody lose. Like that's exciting. Nobody knows anything more than that. And they don't need to, you know, I mean, it's not important. And then all of a sudden it's a very exciting thing. And it's just interesting to me. And again, this isn't a question. This is a comment. I love what you said. We've talked about this a bunch. I don't think we've had anybody on here and I haven't talked to anybody whose suggestion was something different than, let's make it more dual and try, you know, the smaller, maybe a quad meet at the biggest, have competitions that matter, that are meaningful, that have, you know, actual consequences, like there is a winner and a loser. And I guess part of me is trying to figure out who's stopping us from doing this, because everybody wants that. And everybody agrees that that would be a more compelling, exciting way to watch track and field. So thanks for sharing that.
I don't know the exact history of it, but I'm pretty sure what happened was when we started qualifying for national championships by time. That's when the change, when we all moved to going to these invitationals instead of having these quad meets through the season, right? I think that was a big change in whatever it was, the 70s. And so that's just kind of where we're at. But yeah.
I like the history. And I bet you guys would probably, I personally believe that when you are focused on winning and losing, those times come. You know what I mean? Like if I'm just worried about going out and beating somebody, that's when I'm going to run fast. That's when I'm going to jump far, because I've got to. I have to, because I've got to beat somebody. You know, you go chasing the weather and the facilities and the whatever, and you know what I mean? The right race. I mean, that's cool. Nobody cares except for the people in the race. But yeah, you start creating some competitive opportunities, man, and you might get some stuff going.
Well, I'd actually push back. Mike, do people even in the race even care? You know, when you go out to Mount SAC and there's 50 people in the 5K, do they?
Fair enough. They may not even care. You're right.
You know, they're just trying to run a time. You know, that's the thing is, you know, I think Courtney, you're 100% right. Is when the sport changed in probably the early 80s to a straight descending order list qualification. That's when it changed, and you got away from the dual meets and the tri meets, just because everything's, you know, you got to run fast or jump far or throw or, you know, whatever, and so. It's a structural, again, I keep saying it's a structural problem.
Well, hopefully one of the unexpected consequences of COVID will be that, you know, we have to have smaller meets. You know, I'm sure that, you know, some of your guys is, you know, talking about some of these indoor meets and even outdoor meets that, you know, it might be just, you know, some tries and duels and stuff. I know one of our indoor meets, it's going to be just a few teams and stuff. So, you know, maybe we kind of get back to, you know, what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, and you speak of the meets that really bring out the wins and losses, and people are competing against each other. Isn't that conference meets? You know, that's what you get at a lot of the conference championships. And you know, Matt, you were saying what's different about the Ivy League. I mean, heck, we've got HEPs, you know, and that's where we see a ton of those times drop. You know, for us, sometimes it is like it's almost like that last chance meet if you're thinking about a national championship, but at the same time, there's so much history and bragging rights and all of that come with the conference championships and the HEPS championships. I mean, we're all coaches. I probably, when the athletes are on the line, I get just as nervous as I did when I had to compete when they're out there. So, I mean,
good question there. To make it
Yeah, our kids get fired up at the Dartmouth Yale Columbia meet every year. You know, we're going after that, trying to win, you know, and then that's a tri meet. It'd be interesting to see if we had a dual meet champion throughout the year, to, you know, that would be, that would determine the conference champion, is a dual meet champion or something like that. Just to make meets more really meaningful for winning purposes. So,
I'm interested. Do you have like alums and say people that are just associated with the university that are interested in those events and those competitions, that are, does that garner any interest outside of the track world that are associated with your program or associated with your school, university?
I'm sure if we promoted it, I really do. I think if we promoted the dual meet format and how we're like, this is our dual meet record throughout the year, like squaring off against other Ivy League schools, then the alumni would be all over that. I think it's just how you promote the sport in some ways. And we've just always been such a numbers based sport recently, and not so much of the wins losses, I feel like, with large teams. It's more individualized. So yeah, I think our alumni would be all on it if we advertise it the right way.
Yeah, and I also think it catered towards the general population who doesn't understand our sport, you know, because there's so many different events and they're just like, oh, okay, I'm looking to see who wins and who loses. But I will say one of the beauties of track and field is that we do have our own community. It is our own world. And within our sport, we have those small celebrations, right? They're PRs, and we can appreciate that. And I think that sometimes kind of takes over a little bit. Because we can have that. And I think it's probably similar to gymnastics a little bit, right? In that aspect, and swimming as well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you combine as a team, and again, I think that's probably what makes collegiate track and field so very unique, is that that's probably the one time in your track and field career that you're competing as a team, you know? You're individual, but you're competing as a team. Like when else are you going to have that opportunity? Outside of college.
Yeah, I want to bring one. I had a thought the other day, and kind of getting to the promotion of meets.
Wait, you had a thought?
Yeah, I did have. They happen, believe it or not, they happen from time to time. But you know, I was thinking, because it stemmed from, so our basketball team opened up this season the other, you know, yep, this last weekend, and they suckered me, and I bought ESPN Plus for, you know, whatever for the year. And so now I'm watching all these college basketball games when they actually can happen, I guess. But, you know, one thing that thinking about the dual and tri meets and track and field, and one problem that I see, and I'm not trying to be the Debbie Downer here, but, you know, when I first got on the Division I executive committee, I don't know, like 9 years ago now, you know, one of the first tasks that we were charged with was defining a track meet, you know, and that was a project that we went through. You know, and we kind of did some things for outdoor track and field, and I don't know if it was positive or negative. I honestly, I don't even know if it really worked at this point. But, you know, if you have these dual meets and say we went to that format, under the current kind of structure, I mean, the way it works, you could actually have three dual meets going on simultaneously throughout the country, and they don't look anything like one another, you know, because the order of events could be, you know, different. And the events could be different. I mean, there's so many just nuances that we as track coaches, we understand. But if you're the common fan, you know, I think we always talk about wanting to be on TV. Well, if you put three dual meets on TV, on ESPN, and they don't look anything alike, the casual fan is going to be totally lost as to what we're doing. You know, if I watch I watched the SLU LSU basketball game, you know, the other night, and you know, I could turn, you know, to the very next game, whoever it was, and they looked identical. And so I think that's a problem that we need to address amongst, you know, as track coaches. Our sport has to have some, you know, consistency across the board. You can't be a hodgepodge of different events. You know, if you're trying to promote something,
I would say you could find a middle ground to a certain extent. You could have whatever 10 events that have to be contested, and then an extra five that is kind of up to you, right? I mean, there is a bit of regionality to things. I mean, take indoor, for example. Indoor is not as big on the West Coast as it is on the East Coast, and we have tons of events, 400, 500, 600, 800. I mean, it's a middle distance person's dream, right? And so if you're hosting a meet at a quad level and you have maybe 10 events that have to be contested to be considered a countable track and field meet, I think that's the first place to start. I think the other thing too is the time aspect that you mentioned. I mean, if you're a casual sports watcher and you're turning on the television and there's a 3-hour track and field meet with a commercial break after, you know, one 100 meter dash. It's just not fun to watch. And I think one of the things that we need to do I guess key people in the sport is figure out a way to condense the whole meet to 2 hours, right? 2.5 hours. How do we do that? And I think once you're able to do that, it becomes more watchable. It's a movie. It's a 2-hour movie, and everyone can sit through a 2-hour movie, even if it's horrible. So if we could get to that too, I think that's the other point.
Well, right. And, you know, and I know, and we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, you know, and I agree, Courtney, to some extent, you know, when you bring in a company like ESPN, so, you know, they do the outdoor meet, they do the indoor meet, you know, they're the experts at putting on a packaged, you know, track and field meet. And we've talked about, well, is the presentation right? Could we package it better? Could we do it better? But again, if the events are changing and the experts in that field don't really know what's coming up next, it makes it really, really hard for them to do a really good job at what they're good at. You know, I think when we went to the split gender outdoor meet, subsequent year that we've done that, the viewership has gone up and up and up because we've kept the same schedule, we've kept the same format, and the experts, ESPN, have been able to, you know, tweak and modify year after year their production value. So I think, again, that's why I say we got to start really simple and make each meet look like every other, like all the meets have to look the same, you know, otherwise you're not going to be able to market or promote or package the sport very well. I mean, it's just a hodgepodge of, you know, again, the niche community, like Porsche said, the niche community is going to totally like love it and buy into it because, I mean, I can sit and watch, you know, I can go flip from one meet to the next and see a 5K, a hurdle race, a long jump, a, you know, high jump and be enthralled. But the casual fan isn't going to do that.
I think you mentioned 10 events and maybe 5 extra events. I think you got to shrink it even more. Say the Diamond League goes, what, 6 events? Some of that, make it simple so you don't miss 2 meals. Something you can be, boom, in and out the door with. And have a fun thing. You know what? Hey, steeplechase isn't today in Birmingham, but when you go up to Bloomington, it's going to be in Bloomington. Or when you go to Nevada, it's going to be, or go to Reno, you're going to have a javelin, but you're not going to have that over in, you know, up in Hanover. Like, you just change events and have one or two. But again, have your staple of 6 meets. I think we just missed the boat on track and field on what to do, and to promote our sport, how we need to do things. And Tim, you mentioned it a little bit, how do you promote the sport better? You're like, oh, we just need to promote it better to our alums. How would you go about doing that? How would you do that as a Dartmouth? Because you're a Dartmouth alum. How would you do that?
Yeah. I mean, I think if we're going to go with a dual meet format and like, that is the, like a dual, we're advertising a dual meet champion. I think we have to somehow educate our alumni that it's a team-based sport and we're not individual-based as much. So we're looking at our overall team record in so to speak. So like, we'd have to somehow educate our alumni with emails and newsletters first, and get them interested in like, hey, this is the avenue that track is going, or the Ivy League or wherever is going. Yep. Before actually implementing it so that they can get excited about it. But yeah, I think it is a challenge because our sport has evolved over, you know, the past 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever. And it's become more individual and numbers based. So, and that's what we know it as right now. But I really think it can be done. I just think they have to be creative about it.
Hey, give everybody some free food and let them on the infield. They'll have a great time. You know, let them, yeah, and promote it. But things like that. Mm-hmm. We're talking about what people love about Penn Relays. You know, they love feeling the energy. And if you think about these invitationals that go on for hours and hours, they don't feel the energy. They just want to watch the events that they know somebody in, or the events that it really matters. So, you know, if we're looking about how to appeal to spectators, you know, you have to take these pieces that everybody loves from Penn Relays and everywhere else and emulate them in some other ways on a smaller scale and make it appealing so some people want to come and watch a dual meet or a tri meet, and they can feel some of that energy because it all matters in 2 hours. And I think you can build a sport that way. You know, it's possible, but it's a task because it's not the way we do it right now, but maybe COVID opens up that door to do it a little bit and see if it catches.
I mean, that's actually a good point, Coach, because we have something that's called the Dartmouth Relays, right? It's an indoor track and field meet. It's on our flat indoor track. And I think sometimes if you think about having or creating that local rivalry a little bit and really having maybe a quad meet and getting folks out there and saying, hey, come on out, we're scoring this. Like, let's see what's gonna happen. And it ends up being an annual thing, right? Whether, you know, we're here in New Hampshire and we're looking at University of New Hampshire, we're looking at, you know, schools in Vermont and so on and so forth. And people are just kind of coming in and saying, hey, let's go head to head. And schools knowing, like, we've got, you know, what are their expertises? Well, we know that this school is pretty hot in the throws and we're pretty hot in the distance or whatever. And let's battle out and see, you know, the best team wins. But it also brings fans, you know, it brings fans. It brings the alums from each school as well. And it brings interest. And then also too, administration, university, they're all looking at that and they're like, we're winning that meet every year. So I think it's kind of something, I don't know if it's lost its luster a little bit, but like UCLA and USC used to do something like that, you know, and that was a big deal. And that used to happen this same weekend as Penn Relays. And you'd be watching two screens at the same time. Only one meet that had two teams, another meet that has everyone in the country and the world, right? And because you know, it has that history. So if we kind of build things like that, I think it would also too kind of draw interest and if anything, draw that collegiate crowd as well. So.
Yeah, Portia, I would take that one step further, you know, because that USC-UCLA dual meet, mm-hmm. as big of a meet as that is, and it's clearly like a historical important track and field meet, but it really, in today's track and field, doesn't really mean anything. I mean, there's no, I mean, other than the winning and the losing for those kids and those alums, I mean, there's a lot of pride and, you know, for those kids and those alums. But there's no concept. I mean, you win, whatever the winning team, whoever the winning team is, they don't really get a benefit out of that, right? You know, whereas, you know, if your football team or your basketball team loses this weekend, it's a big deal. Like, there's a consequence to that. And so the season then has to change. You know, it can't just be a one-off dual meet here or one-off, you know, try meet there. There actually has to be, you know, some long-term, in my opinion, again, this is a totally different rabbit hole we're going down, but, you know, there has to be some consequence, you know, there's almost like a season standings, like every other sport has for your wins and your losses. You know, so just a one-off dual meet again is very exciting. And I think it's a great start, but then what are the consequences of those dual meets throughout the course of the year? Is there, you know, can you work that into a conference champ, you know, a final, you know, conference championship scenario where who knows, but you know, there should be some consequence for actually winning a meet or losing a meet.
Well, I think that that just kind of goes when you develop those rivalries, because I'm guessing that you know, the Navy Army cross country dual meet or something, there's some consequences for those kids. You know, well, and I would say that that's a pretty big deal for them if they
for them only though, right? You know,
but
again,
I would also disagree. I think the USC UCLA meet, you know, they've developed that. That's a big time rivalry, and I think that's what we're missing is these rivalries. You know,
I mean, that's where you get
the fans involved and the students, normal students. Like, you take pride, like, you know, if Iowa beats Iowa State, I'm pretty damn happy. I don't care if it's in, you know, field hockey or football or basketball or anything. I'm pretty happy. You know, if track's beating them, I'm pretty happy. If they lose, I have no connection to the football program, but I'm pretty pissed. And
I think
kind of develop those rivalries over the years. They're going to, you know, it's going to become meaningful. And I think that's what our students, our alums, our, you know, our athletes, that's what we're missing in the sport of track and field. Nothing means something. But I think that's because we haven't developed these, you know, rivalries we can go around the room here. Who's your rivalry? I mean, we might have somebody that I just don't really like them, but it's like, do we have a rivalry? You know, I mean, for us, it's like, well, UNLV, but it's like every sport here hates UNLV, not just track and field. But I mean, it's like, we need that, I think, in our sport.
I agree. And USC and UCLA, it means a lot to those kids and those alums, but the loser of that can still win the national title. If Alabama football loses this weekend, they may not be in the playoff. There's a serious consequence if Alabama football loses this weekend. And that's what I'm saying. It's just the one step further. If we're going to go down the dual meet route, that these meets actually have to mean something. You know, right now the qualifying for the national championships is not tied into anything with a dual meet, other than if you run a really fast time, maybe you get it, you qualify for the national championships. Great. But if you lose the meet, so what? The score really, again, other than for the kids involved and the alums of those schools, it doesn't mean anything. But if there was something tied into the qualifying for the national championships or postseason or a conference championship, then all of a sudden that meet actually means something. So it's just a one step further. I don't know if I'm articulating that very well, but that's.
Well, and I know we've always talked about, making things simpler, but I feel like there's maybe room for both. So, having these competitions and still being, able to, have a national championship and all of that. Clemson might be an example here. They already lost to Notre Dame, and they're going to be probably playing for a national championship. So not that we want to bring them up, but.
And I'd agree with you, Scott. I mean, I think there is room for both. And I think that our sports, evolved into a sport where we're chasing marks, and that's to advance. And that's just what it is. But it's also, it could be on the coaches for what we really value and the kind of, message that we send back to the athletes, like this does matter. And, and if this is, a route that we're going to go, it could be representative of what we send out to the athletes about what we care about, whether, if it doesn't result in them making the playoffs to win a national championship, it doesn't mean that we can't create value in that and our message to the athletes, if that's a route that we want to go. And, if that's to promote the sport or that's an adaptation to COVID, I just think there is room for both. And it's the environment that we create for them.
And I think, we've talked, tons about coaches being our own worst enemies and stuff. And, I think, as coaches, not promoting or developing some of these rivalries and things like that. I mean, it's kind of, sometimes we don't see teams in our conference until the conference meets. That's the only time we see them the entire year, so it's kind of hard to develop a rivalry when you don't ever see them.
I don't mean to interrupt you, Scott, but it's kind of interesting. You are talking to a group of Ivy League coaches. So with that being said, you're talking to the Dartmouth staff. We got rivalries.
There it is.
Every school in the league is one of the first teams in the country. We've got some deep down dirty rivalries. So we want to win. And I think that's what makes it special, not just for a student athlete looking at an Ivy League school, but for the coaches who want to coach in these positions. When you see a position up, bag on it, everybody's going for it. Why? Because they know what it means. They know how special it is to be in the Ivy League. And I think that's kind of where this recruiting and where our sport has gone and how competitive the league is now. I'll tell you, when I first started in the league in 2012, I tell people it wasn't very competitive. You've got a woman.
I must have graduated already.
Good.
Brilliant.
Well, to your point, there were one-offs. There were superstars, right? We had folks who were winning national titles. We had folks going to the Olympics. We had folks like Courtney who were out there killing it, right? But at large, the team in general, if another school outside the league was trying to compete against our team, they're like, okay. But you fast forward to now, the 2020, man, we've got tons of talent coming out of the Ivy League. But my point is that, you have an opportunity to say, I want to compete on a team and for something that it has value and it means something. I can walk away here saying I won an Ivy League championship at one of the most, storied programs in the country. And I think that's fun, but at the same time, kind of a combination with both Scott and Justin were saying, there's a place for both, you know, and it's almost what I talk about even in recruiting. I'm just like, look, there's an opportunity for you to, one, win a conference championship, two, compete on the national level. You've got the best of both worlds there. Oh, by the way, you're also getting a world-class education. So, I mean, you can't beat that. So I think we got it done there. So,
and I think something that
the director, because she's figured out how to bring it all back to Dartmouth and the Ivy League.
So like, boom, that was absolutely brilliant.
I'm a little recruiting spiel in there on top of it.
I just want to comment on this whole subject, because I think, like, you know, I don't want to segue too much, but, you know, we got to look at what are we teaching our athletes too? Are we teaching them to chase a mark that gets them, you know, to where they want to be? Or are we teaching them to be, to win, or to try to win and compete? And, you know, I think, you know, when we bring it back to what's best for the athletes, and I was talking about what we value and what we teach them, like of course we want them to, you know, have great performances, whether it's in any event, you know, but if we're talking about distance running, we want them to run fast, you know, that's great. But we really need to teach them to compete, because that's what really matters, you know. And when they win in that competition, that's amazing. But when sometimes they compete really well and they don't, that's also a good thing. And I think that's where, like, kind of like character development comes in. And we all need to not get too far away from that. But if we always, I know I get caught up with it, trying to chase a mark, because it results in something that we all want, but we should come back to earth a little bit and remember that's really important.
Something that we've done to create value is in our program is like we've if you win an Ivy League championship, you get your picture framed and put in the wall in our office, and it's usually like an action shot with like the year you won, your mark, something like that. And that's and it's a whole collage of pictures on the wall. And the athletes go in and they look at it and they're really inspired by it. And that's just something that we've had in our history that I think just creates value in winning in the competition in the Ivy League. And, you know, kind of, I guess, like what Justin was saying about the lessons that we're trying to teach the kids and what we're trying to promote. But yeah, it's just something that cool that we've done.
And I heard that there's not much wall space left.
It's getting there.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you mentioned that. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, I go out on a limb and say a lot of those marks that are in those photos on your wall are, if they had a national qualifying mark, that was the one. Or if they had a PR, that was the one that they also won, right? So it's sort of a, which comes first? You know, obviously, you know, well, not obviously. We're talking about trying to teach this competitive spirit and this competitive idea. My argument would be absolutely, because that's where those big marks come from, right? Yeah. That's if you're going to go, I don't know about you guys, but most of my people's best marks, they won the meet. You know what I mean? Like if we had a national qualifiers out of the Big Ten meet, it's because they won the freaking meet, you know, and they weren't worried about a mark that day. They were worried about trying to beat everybody else, because we're trying to win a team title. And I'll be damned if it's not a lifetime best and a qualifying mark too, you know? So I, you know, it's odd that we have seemed to put this emphasis on chasing marks, when in reality, you know, they were putting up some pretty big marks back before we were chasing marks. So somehow that was happening, you know, and it probably, I'd imagine if we went back and looked at the history of the USC UCLA dual meet or these more historic small meets, I'm not the historian, but my guess is that there were some pretty phenomenal marks in those meets. You know what I mean? And it was born of competition.
Sure.
So this is just my little question to everybody here. Who, if you had to name your top rival, who's your guys' top rival?
Purdue University.
Purdue?
I would say everybody hates Cornell. Sorry, Cornell.
They're going to be watching this for now.
I'm going to call up Hondo. I'm going to call up Mike Henderson real quick here in a second and say, hey, man, don't go like thrown down. Just want to let you know.
Bolton board material.
Yeah, we're getting it.
Oh, Porsche, you're going to I'm going to put you on the spot. Are you going to disclaim that? Or are you going to be like, nah, yeah, that's about right?
What did I say before? I'm 2 months in, so, you know, I'm still filling this out. No, I'm just kidding.
No. You've been in the Ivy League way too long. You don't get that free pass. That should be right now on this one. You know what happens.
Oh, I don't know. It changes. When I worked at another university in the league, who our rivalries were, I think it definitely changes. So I'm leaving this one.
Oh, we're getting the politically correct answers here.
We're about competition here, man. Let's call some people out. This is fun.
Coach Tim.
Porsche, I hate to say it, but Penn has really pissed me off with recruiting sometimes. I've lost so many good people to Penn.
Now it's getting good.
And it has really irritated me.
Be completely open with all of you. In this type of league, like, everyone's my rivalry because I'm just trying to be the best. Like, honestly, I tell the kids,
there you go.
Losers focus on winners and winners focus on winning. So if you want to put it like that, everybody's coming for us and we're ready. We want, what do the kids say? We want all the smoke, right? So.
Like that, right?
We still haven't named a name.
She just called out the whole league. So I'll give her that. That was all right with me.
The title of this podcast is going to be like Ivy League, you're on notice. Boom, done. That's all it's going to be. I guess going around the round table a little bit, I've got one of my good friends, a gentleman who I worked with for a year at Bradley, a gentleman by the name of Willie Wood, an incredible coach, no question about that, an incredible guy. I'm going to put him here because I'm going to send him his link. I said, hey, who's the biggest rival? He goes, us, because he's at Columbia. He's like, Princeton. Everybody hates him. Nobody likes him. So, boom, there's a thrown down right there. I had to put it out there. If you're at UAB, let's be honest. Questions, biggest rival, Charlotte or Middle Tennessee? One of the two. Charlotte or Middle Tennessee, one of those two. And if you're an Iowa alum, Scott, you and I both know there's two of them. Iowa State and Minnesota. Just, yeah. John, who's the SLU rival?
Dayton, University of Dayton. Hate them. Can't stand them. Hate them.
Oh,
absolutely.
Man. Rivalries are good for the sport.
Absolutely.
They're great for the sport. Here's the question. Here's the biggest question, though. Can a coach lose their ego and allow themselves to lose a meet, or are they going to go hide? Because we want these dual meets. This whole group wants these dual meets. Everybody we've had on this thing wants the dual meets, but they sit back and go, but we've got to go do well at the national championship so we can get that bonus. And in talking with other coaches in the Ivy League, like, you do well at HEPS, you're getting a bigger bonus than you are if you make, you know, you place well at the national championships. And I don't know how every school is. A couple of them are that way. But HEPS is the big deal. For us, you do well at conference, great. You do well at nationals, you're going to get a bonus. Okay? I'd prefer to make the league, dominate the league, and do what you got to do. And again, what you guys said, you know, the Indiana-Purdue, let's get a great mark out of that stuff. Let's go Penn versus Dartmouth versus Yale. You guys are going to get great marks out of that stuff. Let's go ahead and do that. So could a coach actually drop their ego and lose a meet? Or are they going to want to hide behind everything else? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. And I mean, it all depends on what's on the line for that meet, you know, and to kind of go back to what we were talking about before, we had kind of just, you know, and we brainstormed some ideas where maybe a dual meet record, you know, qualifies you for a conference championship meet. Whereas if you were, you know, 0-8 in dual meets, then you don't get to go to the conference meet, you know? So if that's the, you know, like every other sport that has a conference tournament, I'm pretty sure not everybody goes to that conference tournament, and I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's the way it works, you know? And so I'm not ducking a meet if I know I got to win them to get into the conference meet, and I'm trying to win a conference title, you know? And, you know, so I think that's a way, you know, you put some value on them and you make it really de-incentivized to hide or to save people for a bigger meet. You know, this is the big meet. We've created it. The dual meet is big because if you don't win it, you don't get to go to the real big meet, you know? And I think that's an important
point. Yeah, no point. Scott, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just was, you know, I agree. That's, you know, I was kind of fighting on the other end there with John a little bit about, you know, the importance and stuff like that. But I mean, I really think there's got to be room for both. You know, I mean, I think, you know, you, you know, what's entertaining to people? You know, we're sitting here talking about, you know, every time we get on this podcast, it's, you know, we're talking about Clemson or Minnesota or Brown or, you know, William and Mary and stuff. And it's like, we've got to stop being our own worst enemies. And, you know, there's nothing stopping, you know, as coaches, us putting together these meets, but, you know, we've just got to be the ones to do it. And, you know, I think that's, you know, difficult for coaches to make that change. That's why I'm kind of hoping a little bit with this COVID-19 and, you know, the ramifications of it, that we're going to kind of maybe be forced to do it a little bit, especially indoors, if we have an indoors, that we have these smaller meets and dual meets and tries and, you know, we start to see the benefit of those.
I'll just go ahead and echo what Portia said about just embracing the challenge in general. I mean, especially in the Ivy League, and I'll speak to distance since I'm a women's distance coach. Yep. We have produced some amazing teams. I mean, there are times when there are three men and three men's Ivy League teams at the national championships, and then most all teams are represented by an individual. And so to duck a dual or a tri or quad meet along the way, I think would be silly. I think we're all pushing each other along the way, but we've done a really great job of developing and recruiting these national caliber talents and helping them, again, kind of along their path here at Dartmouth specifically, get to those meets. And so, no, I don't think we duck meets. I think we you know, compete, embrace, and we go back to the conference championship, have another go at it. But I think at least for here at Dartmouth, the heptagonal championships, Ivy League championships, regionals, nationals, we've done really well. And I think it's because we are embracing every step as a development, right, along our way.
And I'll kick in here. You know, we have nothing right now. So, you know, give us a meet. I don't think, you know, anybody should be ducking any meet, you know. So you compare the fact that you just don't have any competition, give us something, you know, and let us go to it. And what it turns into in the future, you know, maybe, you know, we keep rolling with that, or maybe it goes back to how it's been. But, you know, from my perspective, and I think probably most coaches and athletes would feel this way, give us some competition, you know, and we'll take it and enjoy it and make the most out of it. And I think we all kind of need that, you know. I don't know if desperate's the right word, but man, it'd be great to get back to, you know, some sort of normalcy for everyone, for all of us, because it's been tough.
There's no question. I saw a great tweet by Mike Bray, the Notre Dame head men's basketball coach. And I'm going to paraphrase here because I can't remember it fully, but I remember the tweet itself. And it said, notice to everyone, we will play you. Just let us know when. We'll get on a flight. We'll see you then. And it was something along those lines. And yeah, he would take down SLU in a heartbeat. No questions about that.
Our coach called. He hasn't returned the call.
Man,
he put that out in the media too. So yeah. Travis Ford called. Mike Bray didn't return the call.
Ah, well, either way, the question is going to be, I mean, I think in general, even if Notre Dame doesn't want to play SLU, sorry, both Notre Dame and SLU, since we've had Notre Dame alums probably listen to this podcast a little bit. Either way, I just like the idea. I really do. And Justin, I think you're 100% right. Let's go ahead and race each other. Let's go ahead and play each other. Let's go ahead and get some competitions going. And if it's got to be a dual meet, guess what? It's a dual meet. Let's make this kind of stuff happen. I think we have to make it happen. And you guys are right. I think the whole panel and Dartmouth staff, that's what I'm going to call you guys, Dartmouth staff and the whole panel, I think you guys did a great job saying that, like, look, we need competition to happen. And if it's got to be a quad meet, fine. I mean, how many times right now I'm hearing the SEC is going to have five teams. That's it. You know, we just talked to Marshall University. They're going to have four. They're allowed five teams in their competitions as well. Okay, opportunities are going to be very, very limited. So, honestly, if you're going to have five teams, score the thing. Make it a big deal. Let's make some big publicity out of this, and let's make this kind of something that we can all run with and we can use to the betterment of our sport. If not, we're just going to sit back and be like, oh, we had a five-team meet. Nobody really gave a shit about what actually happened. It was just a meet. No, make this something that counts. Portia, there's no question about it. Your staff is absolutely hilarious. You guys are an absolute blast. If I'm an Ivy League coach, and first off, I heard the fact that you guys decided to call out names. You did not. I will clarify that. But it is, well, I would be on full alert. Damage. Here we go. But no, in all honesty, you guys are incredible. I am excited. I'm excited for what you guys are going to do. No questions about that. Porsche, I'm excited for you. You're in an incredible role, and you can absolutely tell with your history, what you've accomplished, not only as Coach of the Year, but the amount of people you've put at the national championships, the All-Americans, the All-Ivies, the all everything that you've had. There's no question that, that this role fits you perfectly. And it's going to be very exciting to see how you take this role and absolutely run with it. I'm excited to see it. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us. And, you know, for folks who can't see our faces, you know, we're all smiling and laughing behind the scenes here. And I really think that's a testament to just our personalities and our dynamic, right? Sometimes they say you're as good as who you have around you, right? And mm-hmm. I'm super confident in this staff, and I'm excited to have fun with them. And I've told them that many a times. I was like, you know, I want to work hard. I want to win. I love to win. I want to make it happen. I want to help the student athletes, but I want to have fun, and I want to have fun with you guys. And I want the team to see us having fun, you know, because that definitely translates and trickles down to them, and they want to have a good time. So we want to have fun making it happen. And that's what we're going to do. So hopefully, you know, maybe somewhere down the line, you guys pop in and get an update on our journey, and, you know, hopefully we're killing it. And then we can talk about how that happened. So.
I love it. Timothy, Justin, Courtney, thank you guys. Appreciate you guys being here.
Ithaca is gorgeous. Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen,
a lot of fun.
Ladies and gentlemen, we truly appreciate you guys making a podcast that you listen to every single week. We appreciate the loyalty and everything that you guys do. If you found value in this podcast, if you need poster board material, whatever you'd like to do with the podcast, go ahead and throw it up there. Share it with everybody that you need to. Word of mouth without question is more important than radio, TV, and anything else. That is the way that things get done in this world. So until further ado, when we see you guys next week, or we talk to you next week, we'll try and do better as well. Be safe, and we'll talk to you later. Thanks, guys. I should have told you.